Views and opinions expressed by the hosts are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of their employers. This podcast may not be suitable for children. Adults may find details triggering and/or offensive. Listener's discretion is advised.
Hi, everyone. This is Norma.
And this is Priscilla, your favorite Capricorn.
I'm your favorite Aries.
Right. Whatever. Earth signs over fire signs every day. You feel me? Anyways, this is It's the Mystery for Me.
Welcome back, everyone. Another week, another mystery.
Here we are, and it's a Norma takeover. I know y'all live for that.
At this point, I feel like we shouldn't even say like it's a Norma takeover because we do the same amount of episodes now, right?
I mean,
like it alternates now.
I guess. I'm trying to see if it stays this way. That'd be great because people like to hear you just as much as they like to hear me. Maybe a little more.
I think a little bit more. I don't know how I find these stories, but there's just a lot of twists and turns.
So I need a neck brace again?
Yeah.
Well, damn, Norma, come on.
It starts off like, okay, I know where this is going. And then it's just, oh my gosh, it's a roller coaster.
So what about the sources? What were you looking at?
So,
on this roller coaster ride?
Yeah, there were multiple sources. There's a ton of articles. There are Court of Appeals documents. There are so many shows.
Really?
Wow. Yeah, there's a lot. So I, specifically for this, I watched Snapped.
Okay.
It's an Oxygen show. But there's a lot more. I've never heard of this show, but it's also an Oxygen show, A Wedding and a Murder.
Okay.
And that's season one, episode 8. There's a Forensic Files show. It's called Textbook Murder is the episode. That's season 14, episode 9. There is Dateline, Deadly Affair, American Monster with Honors. There's a lot. There's a lot out there.
Well,
okay.
There's a few
podcasts that have,
really?
Yeah, that have covered it. So there's a lot of information there. So, but luckily you have me that has like summarized and condensed it. So
that's what I was just
to,
about to say. I'm you sure know. You're going to bring some details that other people overlooked.
I'm sure, yeah.
So,
because I'm telling you, when you look at appeal documents, there's so much information in it that is completely left out.
I feel like the appeal documents would really be having all the tea. Just court documents in general.
Yeah.
You can find like the original court transcript, but definitely the appeals document definitely has a lot of information. And for all of today's sources, please check out our website, itsthemysteryforme.com, or look directly under today's show notes, and you'll find it there, too. Or a link to it there. It's too long to fit sometimes, y'all. That's why we just link it to the site, and then you go on the site, and then all the sources are there. You know what's interesting about us citing and stuff? That's how I grew up in high school, like through middle school and stuff. Remember Turnitin, where you had to put the paper, you had to upload your paper through that program?
No.
In high school, you don't remember that program, Turnitin? It's a website.
No.
And it would basically tell your teacher if you were plagiarizing.
I don't think I ever had to do that.
Okay, I feel like...
I'll ask my friends.
I feel like everyone did that. But all of that to say, what I noticed in being a lawyer, this is kind of random, we basically plagiarize all the time as lawyers. Like me drawing up contracts, I remember thinking like, wow, I have to draw up a contract from scratch every single time. And then people in my job were like, no. We use like the work we've done for that same company already. And we just change the words. Like we just change the names.
Yeah.
And I was just like, wow, my entire life through high school, college, law school, they were like, no plagiarizing. And then I became a lawyer in asset management. And this is what we do.
I mean, it's true,
it's
but I think
contradictory.
it's seen as, okay, you're using this as a template.
Right, like that's you the don't way that reinvent the wheel.
Yes.
But why isn't it seen as the same thing when I'm in high school and college? Why I got to reinvent the wheel? Like in college, it was unacceptable if you wrote something like Martin Luther King was born on this day. But if you wrote on this day, Martin Luther King was born, you were good. You feel me? You were good. You passed the test, you know? But all of that to say, we don't plagiarize on this show because it's all about journalism. We want to give everybody credit where credit's due. A lot of people have put in a lot of time writing these articles, putting these TV shows together. And that's why we always link the sources to the episode. So yeah, see, my rant had a point. It had a point. So don't come for me in the reviews. Don't come for me. All right. So you want to tell us where we're going?
Yeah. So I guess we'll just go into the episode, right? This case is taking us back to 2006 in Mississippi. This is a case of Avis Banks. So Avis Banks was born on August 18th, 1979. She was a middle child out of three daughters to Frederick Banks and Deborah Banks, and they lived in Vicksburg, Mississippi. She is described as someone who was smart, kind. She loved children. She loved learning. And so it was no surprise that she went off to college and she got a degree in early child development. And she ended up graduating cum laude from Alcorn State University. Then in the winter of 2004, Avis meets Keon Pittman at a gym, and they pretty much just hit it off. It was chemistry off the bat, and it turned out that they had a lot in common. He was a teacher. She loved kids. She worked in a, she worked at a daycare. So they had a lot in common, and soon after that, they started dating.
Gotcha.
According to this Snapped episode, she did have dreams of opening her own daycare, and she shared, you know, this passion with Keon, and he was very supportive of that. They ended up moving to Jackson, Mississippi, which is where he worked. He was a math teacher. At James G. Chastain Middle School in Jackson.
Who else was a math teacher that you know?
I guess you, right? But didn't you teach a little bit of everything?
Yeah, I did.
Okay. No, but really, like your core, math. Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
He was also a basketball coach.
Okay. Nice. I love the kids. Him,
do you?
She love the kids. No. I love my students, but that's why I'm freezing my eggs. I don't know about kids, y'all. I'm going to tell y'all right now. You feel me? We're going to put them in the incubator. Is that what it's called? No, we're going to put them in the freezer until we're ready.
Okay. Well, anyways, their relationship was moving not super fast, but, you know, a good year and a half into the relationship, they decided to buy a house in Ridgeland, Mississippi, which is about 15 minutes away from Jackson, Mississippi. So it wasn't that bad of a drive.
How old were they at this point?
So at this point, she's 27 and Keon is 31.
I just love this for them because, you know, I don't know. A lot of us don't own homes, right? Like, meaning it's like, you know, the history of the United States has made it very difficult for people of color, in particular, Black people to own homes, especially in the South. You know what I'm saying? I know at this point we're in the 2000s, but, you know, things, they don't make it easy for us to get loans at banks. You know what I'm saying? They don't make it easy for a lot of these things to happen. So I love that they are investing in real estate and, you know.
Yeah. Another reason for their move was because she actually was pregnant at this point, too.
Well, damn. Okay.
And
you said it wasn't well, I guess that's what you meant when you said it was moving a little fast. I was like, well, they got a house together. Well, now
I mean, this is like a year and a half into the relationship, so it's not that fast.
I guess.
I don't know.
I guess time is objective.
Yeah.
No, it's subjective.
Yeah, that's subjective.
Person. Okay. Mm-hmm.
But he was adamant that he did not want to live in an apartment. He wants to raise a kid in a house.
Amazing.
And all seemed well. According to Avis's sister, they seemed like the perfect couple. Everything was settled in and they were planning a wedding, actually.
Okay.
I think either January, February of 2007. So keep in mind, this is 2006.
Gotcha.
And Avis was just so excited about it. She always talked about having this dream wedding.
Mm-hmm.
She has the ring. She's a fiance. You know, okay. She has a man of her dreams. She's having a that baby part. With him. They have a home, right? Just everything seems to be happening and falling into place, or so she thought. So on the day of November 29th, 2006, at 5:15, Avis gets off of work from the daycare, and on her way home, she calls Kayon. It's Kayon. I keep saying Kayon.
It's okay. People will forgive you.
Okay. So she calls Kayon and she talks to him and he asked her, okay, like, what do you want for dinner? And I thought, oh, that's really nice checking on your pregnant fiance and seeing what she wants for dinner.
So nice.
But he actually had to go to basketball practice that day. So he was on the phone with her briefly because that started around 5:30. Kayon actually comes home after practice around 8:40 p.m. to, unfortunately, a gruesome crime scene. And Avis has been attacked.
Oh my gosh, okay.
So he goes into the garage and there is blood everywhere and she's on the floor of the garage. At this point, Avis is a 27-year-old woman. She is 5 months pregnant. From what he can tell, she has been stabbed and she has been shot multiple times.
Oh, okay.
So it looks like she was getting out of her car. She had already pulled fully in into the garage. She had closed the garage and someone had attacked her.
Like, wait a minute, instantly. Wait a minute. So she pulled into the garage.
Mm-hmm.
The door was closed when someone, like, meaning the door was already down.
Yes.
And someone was already in the garage?
Yes.
It seems like, that's
the way that they made it seem. Because initially I was like, oh, like, maybe the garage door was open and someone just ran in. But it made it seem like someone was waiting for her kind of thing.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So Kayon is in a panic. The show makes it known, the show as in Snapped, makes it known that he was holding her, so he got blood all over him. He kissed her, was cradling her, and then he makes a phone call really quickly to someone by the name of Carla Hughes.
Excuse me?
Now I know what you're thinking. Why is he not calling?
Is that another name for 911? I'm just trying to figure something out.
I was wondering that, too. He calls Carla Hughes, whoever this is, instead of calling 911. And then a few minutes goes by, and he runs over to the neighbor's house. He's trying to knock on their door, but they don't know what's going on. So right. The neighbor calls 911 because they're like, this crazy man is frantic. Like, yeah. We don't know what's going on. And I guess the husband of the neighbor went outside and was able to talk to him and actually get information as to what was going on. And so technically, the neighbor called 911. So Kayon did not call 911.
Okay, that's the first red flag.
Yeah. And detectives were wondering the same thing.
Right.
So when the 911 call came in, it was around 8:45. So it was pretty quick between him getting home at 8:40. It's a 5-minute interval, but in between that time, he called Carla, whoever Carla is.
We established that Carla is not 911.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much.
What the hell?
So the cops arrive almost immediately, and they're trying to put together what happened because they just couldn't understand. This is a pregnant woman, like, visibly pregnant. Like, who would want to do this to her? And obviously, they're going to look at the fiancé because they're like, okay, that's your fiancé, and you were the first to find her. Right. So that's a little strange.
Mm-hmm.
During this time, Kayon actually calls Avis's parents, and he is really frantic and tells them that they have to come down immediately. I believe that they might still be in Vicksburg, Mississippi at this point, because this is where she grew up.
Okay, so how far away is Vicksburg from where she's living now?
So Vicksburg is about 50 minutes away from Ridgeland, Mississippi.
Okay.
Her parents basically said that the way that Kayon described it, they thought that that Avis actually lost the baby.
Okay.
They had no idea that anything had happened to her and the baby.
Oh my gosh.
So imagine, they basically come to the crime scene and they're told that something horrible happened to their daughter and they're in shock.
My goodness.
It's completely unexpected. So the autopsy report comes back and Avis actually had been shot 4 times at close range, and one was execution style to the back of her head. One was to her stomach, her chest, and I believe her arm. And she was also stabbed.
This sounds like such a crime of passion.
That's what the detectives were thinking too, except for the fact that the house seems to have been ransacked. There were clothes everywhere, drawers were open. The door, like the back door of their house had been kicked in. Mm. So they were like, is this a burglary? But then they also thought, well, the TV is still there and the DVD player is still there. Granted, this is 2006. So yeah, DVD player.
I was like, well, they have the DVD player.
Yeah. Okay. So they thought like, okay, someone is clearly trying to stage a burglary, but this doesn't seem like just a burglary. This seems like a crime of passion.
I was just going to say, I felt like maybe this person might be staging it. You know what? These people are not smart. Not smart. This happens in all the dang shows I watch where they try to make it look like a robbery. They never actually succeed in doing it because for some reason they never manage to actually take anything. Like, okay, I just, I can't.
Well, this person, whoever did this, was not smart enough because they kicked the door in and they left a footprint on the door.
Amazing.
So
I love that for
that
them.
That was one of the things that the detectives zeroed in on, and that's where they were able to start from. The big question is, who would want to hurt Avis? Who would want to see her dead? Who would want to see her and her baby dead?
Right.
Because, you know, clearly the person who shot her was aiming for her head and her stomach.
Right.
The detective started with Keon. They brought him in and they were just questioning him. He was a person of interest, obviously. He felt that, you know, I don't get it. Like, why am I here? I have an alibi. Mm. They didn't think that he was being emotional. He didn't seem sad. You know, again, that's open to interpretation. People deal with things differently. He could still be in a state of shock, obviously.
Did they show the footage of his questioning?
They did.
What'd you think watching it?
He seemed a little out of it. He seemed a little cold.
Okay.
But at the same time, this is literally same night, you know, that they're taking him in for questioning. So, but when they did ask him about the 911 call, that was a little strange because, well, the reason why he didn't call 911, rather, he basically said that he wasn't sure whether it would actually go through because he was calling from a cell phone and he thought that the call might be rerouted.
See, that's another red flag. We are already on red flag number two. Okay. Huh?
Right? That doesn't make any sense.
That doesn't make sense because he clearly thought it was going to go through the Carla.
Right.
So I mean, I just don't understand that.
It just
that
doesn't
make...
That
kind of explanation, it makes no sense. But you're saying basically, going back to the scene, she obviously was killed. Like, she was, you know, you said execution style to the head. So, yeah, she didn't survive. She was probably pronounced dead on the scene.
Yeah, so that's literally what he said. And then they start to ask him about his day.
Right.
And he's like, well, I did run errands and I got groceries before basketball practice, and I actually dropped those groceries off at Carla's house. I went to basketball practice, and then I drove back to Carla's house and picked up the groceries and went home.
Wait, he went to... Okay, wait a minute. Why was he bringing the groceries? Can you tell us what was on the grocery list?
Because I wish I knew. I didn't find any specifics.
I mean, was it ice
to...
cream? Did Carla live nearby? He didn't want it to melt?
Yes.
Shouldn't there be... Wait a minute. Basketball practice probably in the gym at the school, and the gym is near the cafeteria most likely, so couldn't he have used the school's fridge?
Sometimes I feel like the cafeteria is closed off though.
I mean, sometimes, but how close is Carla to the school?
And I think it was,
that's just so random.
I'm pretty sure that on the show they said that Carla was in between where the school's located and his home.
Okay.
And that it made sense for him to bring the groceries to keep everything fresh and cold.
But what groceries was it? This is in November.
Yeah.
It's cold outside. What's the temperature in Mississippi at the time? I'm really taking, because I'm wondering, meaning, can't you keep the groceries in your car? It's the end of November.
I don't know, Priscilla. Like, I wish I had details as to the weather on that day.
I'm looking it up. It's between 64 and 72 degrees. So maybe he had ice cream. I don't know.
It's possible. You know, maybe that was one of Avis's cravings and he's like, I gotta feed my fiance, but then why are you over here at Carla's house? Like, what's happening with that? I don't know, but we'll get into it.
Okay, good.
But yeah, so after basketball practice ended around 7:30, he went to Carla's house to retrieve the groceries. He was back home at his house in Ridgeland at around 8:40, which is when he discovered Avis's body.
So I would love to know how far Carla's house is from his house, because if he left practice at 7:30 and he went to pick up groceries, why did it take him an hour and 10 minutes to get home?
So I was wondering the same thing too. Based on was trying to console Carla, because she seemed really out of it. She seemed like she was mad at him.
Who is Carla to him, to this man?
So we'll get into that shortly. Shortly, I promise. He was talking to Carla, it said, for like a good 40 minutes. Okay. He was over at her house.
Sure.
At this point, the detectives still see him as a person of interest, but there's not anything there to pin him to this case. It's just obviously a lot of suspicious circumstances, of course. Before he leaves, though, they do take like a print of his shoe. They do take samples of gun residue to see like whether he had like gunpowder on his hand. So they do that, and then they send him off. The very next day, they ended up stopping at his job to talk to his coworkers. And apparently he, aside from being a math teacher and a basketball coach, he was also bartending part-time. They went into the restaurant. Is he Jamaican?
It's like this running joke that Jamaicans have a lot of jobs.
Oh.
I think I saw it on Twitter. I don't know.
I mean, his last name is Pittman. That could be Jamaican origin, you know?
I don't know.
But he's a hardworking man, and clearly, like, you know, with having a house, I don't know how long he was working as a bartender.
Right.
But yeah, the cops went in and they were talking to his coworkers, and they said, actually, there is this one woman that comes in, and they started describing her. They didn't know specifics as to who she was, but he told the police officers, and what they're saying, it seemed like this was also Carla that they were talking about. So at this point, they're like, okay, we got to go talk to Carla, because who is she and why does she keep coming up in conversations?
I mean, that's what I'm saying.
So, yeah, I think this is a good time to introduce her. Sorry for keeping you guys waiting. Carla was actually a 25-year-old teacher that worked with Keon. They come in to the middle school and they want to talk to Carla, and she was very cooperative. But something that was really, really weird is she immediately made it a point to detectives that she does not have any sort of romantic relationship with Keon, which is just kind of like,
so huh? They didn't ask her?
No, it seemed like she just provided
she just
it.
The yeah. Information.
Mm-hmm.
Tricky.
But she seemed to show a lot of, I guess, empathy for him. She was sad that he had lost his fiance in such a tragic way.
Mm.
Anyway, she does decide, okay, I'm going to come to the police station and talk to you further, because he said, you know, we would recommend that you come and talk to us later. And so she does. Before I get into her going to speak with the cops at the police station, let me give you a little bit of a background on Carla. So Carla actually grew up in Greenville, Mississippi. Don't ask me where it is, because I don't know the proximity from that to Jackson. She was 25, like I said. She always wanted to be a teacher. She was a straight A student. She is very social. She was a cheerleader. She was in band. She even competed in beauty pageants. Mm. She graduated from the University of Southern Mississippi in 2004. I believe during that time she met her ex-fiance. She got pregnant. She was just about to get married. And a few days before the wedding, he called it off completely. So she was heartbroken from that. She did end up having her son. And she was a single mom. At this time that she now finds this job at this middle school in Jackson, Mississippi, she decides to leave her son with her parents in Greenville, Mississippi. And so she's now living in Jackson. She rents an apartment, and within 3 months, it actually gets broken into. Her parents seemed to be very concerned about this for her safety and thought, like, you know, she should move and so forth. I do think that she ended up moving from that particular apartment, but it was always something in the back of her parents' mind of like, you gotta watch out, you gotta be careful, you know, you just never know. She starts working at James G. Chastain Middle School, and that's where she meets Keon in August of 2006. They hit it off. Apparently, they were spending a lot of time with each other, and I guess what Keon would tell Avis is that he was hanging out with co-workers, as in plural. I mean, it just didn't seem like she knew what was really happening. She really trusted him, is the sense that I got. But really, he was out here hanging out with Carla one-on-one.
Oh.
So much so that Carla actually brought him around to meet her family.
Really?
Yes.
All the way in Greenville? That's about 2 hours away from Jackson.
Wow.
I just looked it up.
Thanks for doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she never introduced him as her man or her boyfriend.
But so what she said, my little friend?
I don't know, but like what? That was a point that was made on the show that he was never introduced in that manner. They definitely had a romantic fling going on, for sure.
Are you sure? Carla said they didn't.
Well, based on, you know, these details, you know, you can't really...
I'm sarcastic. I'm pretty sure. I mean, I kind of had that feeling.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you say that. So let's flash forward to December 1st, 2006, which is when Carla decided to go in and speak to detectives a little bit further as to her relationship with Keon. She admits to the fact that they did have a romantic relationship, even though before she said they didn't.
Well, there's another red flag.
But lying she, yeah, you should definitely not do that.
She shouldn't have honestly even gone down to the station.
Yeah, she shouldn't. Yeah, she shouldn't have done
I'm
that
sure
either.
She did not have a lawyer present.
No, she did not.
So
no.
From a legal perspective.
Yeah.
From a justice for Avis perspective. Ha ha! Got you now.
Yeah. So absolutely, she shouldn't have done that, but you know. She did, and she explained that it was more so of a sexual relationship, that it wasn't romantic. So it seemed like she's trying to downplay it.
Wait a minute. So why is she bringing him 2 hours plus to meet her parents, her family? Her son definitely is there. So So what the heck is she saying?
I don't know. And she also just throws out there, actually detectives did ask her, do you own guns? And she said, no, I don't, but my dad does. He's a hunter. Like, girl, why would you even say that?
Oh, my gosh.
Maybe she's just 25 and she just isn't thinking.
And maybe she's innocent, right? Maybe she is innocent. Yeah. She's just like, okay, well, I have nothing to hide, so.
She's being asked.
I mean, if we're looking at the question, though, it's, do you own guns? You feel me? It's not, does anyone else own guns?
Right.
So it's like, stick to the question. But again, if she's good for this crime, aha, I got you now. But as a lawyer, I would be like, they didn't ask you that question.
Right.
Like, they asked you if you had guns. Do you own a gun?
Mm-hmm.
The answer would be no.
Yeah. But short and simple. But yeah.
Here goes Carla.
So at this point, detectives are just having a sense that something's off with Carla. And even Keon, and they actually subpoena to have their cell phone records. 4 days later, on December 5th, 2006, there's a break in the case. So Carla's cousin, Patrick Nash, he actually calls in with his attorney, tells detectives...
See, he got some damn sense. Okay.
Yeah, I was like, okay.
With his lawyer.
Okay, you're already lawyered up. Okay.
He said, y'all ain't gonna get this black man.
Literally, that's what I was thinking. He says that he lent Carla a gun recently.
Oh, no.
And he goes on to give, like, specifics as to the gun, that it's a 38 caliber revolver.
Mm.
He actually gave it to her 3 days prior to Avis's death. So she passed away on November 29th, so he gave the gun to Carla on the 26th of November.
And when we air this episode, isn't it going to be the 29th? November 29th.
Is it?
Yeah. Tuesday is the 29th, is it not?
That's really creepy.
Norma, you're creepy. That's so sad. It was right around Thanksgiving. Like, they had just had Thanksgiving and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just thinking that they just had Thanksgiving. Yeah.
Okay. Well, all right. What else the cousin say?
So, he also said that he gave her a knife. Hunting knife.
No.
The knife, he gave it to her to keep because, obviously, she had issues with a break-in.
Okay.
And she was very on edge from that. So, and she made it known, like, I'm scared for my safety.
Hold on. People are not going to like me interrupted. I got questions. And if you got an answer to this later, just tell me.
Oh, okay. Okay.
When she called her parents and told them about the break-in, was she just basically laying the groundwork as far as, like, trying to trick people into thinking that there was a break-in? She was scared of for her life. That way she could get these guns and this... Well, this one gun and this hunting knife.
You never know. I never even thought about that.
And it didn't come up on the show?
No.
Shit. I'm just saying. You know, my brain can't work.
It may have came up on one of the shows.
Not to that extent, but yeah.
It may have came up on one of the shows. Like, It's possible.
There's just so many episodes. I don't know. My antennas went up because when you're like, the cousin said, you know, he had given her the hunting knife because of everything happening. I'm like, mm-hmm. what if this was premeditated? And right. she's like, how can I make it look like my life was in danger? And that way it makes sense for me to have these things in my possession.
Mm-hmm.
But where she messed up is when she told the cops, first of all, she told the cops different things. First, she didn't have a gun.
Mm-hmm.
Then she told them that her dad had a gun.
Mm-hmm.
She never mentioned the cousin having a gun and giving it to her.
Yeah.
She never mentioned the cousin giving her a knife. So it's like she basically is digging herself into a hole.
Mm-hmm.
She's giving wrong information, basically.
Yeah.
Her dad could have a gun, but what the hell do I got to do with this?
Exactly.
So,
and they asked her, do you own a gun or are you in possession of a gun?
Right.
And she said no.
So wait a minute. She still got the cut. Well, let's keep going.
So the cousins gave her the gun,
right.
but it was supposed to be returned to the cousin at some point.
Okay.
Okay. She ends up returning the gun to him. I don't know at like what day she does that, but he said it was loaded and that when she returned it to him, it was unloaded.
Uh-uh.
And she told him that she used it during target practice.
Okay.
The show didn't really even go into it. I was like, did she actually go to target practice? And where did she go to do that? They didn't go into details about it.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if she did. Again, just to lay the groundwork. Just for there to be an explanation for something, right? Then mm-hmm. it's harder for people to be like, well,
yeah.
why is the gun unloaded? Well, check the cameras. I was at the shooting range.
Yeah. This is how you build an alibi to get away
Literally,
with murder.
But she's just doing it in a horrible way.
Yeah.
Because she messed yeah. up right in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
But it would have been, it looks like, a good alibi if she had actually told the truth and actually did these things.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't even know if Carla's guilty. I guess, keep telling me.
Okay. Well, apparently, you know, the bullets that ended up killing Avis came from a .38 caliber revolver.
Okay, she guilty. And next week on... What the hell?
So on December 6, 2006, the Richland Police Station, they informed Carla that she was being arrested for accessory to murder. They hoped pretty much that her being charged with this would have her cave in and tell them more details about Keon because they felt like he had something to do with it too. And so they thought like, okay, we could get two for one deal kind of. So then the next day on December 7th, 2006, they get a search warrant for Carla's house. They never find the knife, but they do find shoes that seem to fit the description or are about the same size as the shoe print that was left on Avis and Leon's back door the night that Avis was murdered. Then on December 8th, the very next day, Carla is charged with two counts of capital murder for the deaths of Avis and Avis's unborn child. So, just wanted to note this, that in the state of Mississippi, a fetus that is 5 months is considered to be a viable life. So that's why she's being charged with two counts of capital murder.
Oh.
The trial finally begins on October 5th, 2009. So that's a while.
Wow.
Yeah. The state was not playing around with this case when it came to the fact that Avis and her unborn child
right.
were murdered.
Right.
And they were actually seeking the death penalty.
Oof.
So I think a lot of people are wondering, you know, how did Carla fall so hard? Because she seemed to have a promising life. How does a woman with such a bright future do something like this? Or, you know, it seems the way that everything is set up that she likely didn't.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, at least to me, it seems like that. And I feel like that was what the prosecution was running with. This is a woman who fell from grace. She was jealous. She mm-hmm. was obsessed with Keon. And she would do anything to be with him.
And then the other argument, I feel like, from her defense team would be that she has a promising future. She was an excellent student.
Mm-hmm.
She is a mother to her son.
Yeah.
She was doing the best she could. And that she would be the last person to do something like this.
That's exactly what they were saying.
See?
Yeah.
Psychic. Yeah. Or a lawyer. One of the two. One of the two. Or both.
Mm. Yeah, no, but the prosecution was basically saying, nope, Carla wanted what Avis had. Okay?
Mm.
She wanted that life, that fairy tale wedding, because it never happened for her, right? She was a fiance, but then her fiance technically dipped a few days beforehand and called off the wedding. Maybe it's a little bit of like attachment to a person and like anxious attachment, but she just couldn't deal with the rejection of Keon.
But she was only 25. Like, you could find somebody. You still got time. Shoot, you got your whole life. Don't you see people getting married at like 40, 50, 60, 70, 80? You know what I'm saying? Like, people get married, remarried, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So there was time, basically. Yeah. And there's, I don't know.
Like, we don't know to what extent she really wanted to get married to him.
I mean, if she killed his fiance.
I'm just saying, like, I'm playing devil's advocate, because obviously the state is going to want to push this agenda that she was obsessed with him. She was jealous. She wanted this life. But
the defense would say, maybe she was also not really, meaning she wouldn't be the one who did this crime because maybe she didn't care.
She didn't really care all that much. Yeah.
Right. Okay.
That's what I mean.
I see. Wait, but did they ever say why her and her fiance broke up? Like, why he called it off?
No, I didn't.
And that's the father of her child?
Yes, it is.
And why did the kid live with her parents and not him?
That's a good question. I'm not sure.
They don't really dive into a lot of these shows. They need to put me on there. Let me put us there. I'm going to give them the third degree. I got questions and I need answers.
No, yeah.
I feel like that would give some insight if the fiance could say why he called off the wedding.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's always multiple sides to a story, of course. But, like, I would just be interested to know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's definitely a very good point. So to better drive forth this whole picture that Carla is guilty and she did it and she was jealous. She was a jealous lover. The prosecution puts on their case and they call on their witness, and it's no other than Keon Pittman.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
What does that fool have to say? I just need to hear.
So one of the reporters, it might have been a reporter or a journalist, but they said that he was fake crying and he was trying so hard to cry, but there were no tears. What do they call that in Spanish? Lágrimas de cocodrilo?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was going to say crocodile tears.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they said it was just very strange. He was asked about the 911 call and rather why he didn't call 911.
Right.
And he was basically saying that in the moment, he was just thinking, I have to call Carla because he was just with her.
Yeah.
So it was just an instinct to dial her number. It was like the last person he spoke to. And I was just like, and then he did go into the fact of like, oh, also, I thought, you know, 911 would be rerouted and I wouldn't get through because I was calling from a cell phone.
But you called Carla. That's
it
just doesn't make sense.
You know, like he tried. I don't know.
I don't know if your first instinct. I mean, I feel like until you're in the situation, you might not know if you're like in that much shock. You know what I'm saying? And like his image basically is tainted by the fact that he was having this affair with Carla. Mm-hmm. So I think it's hard, at least for me, to see like him calling Carla as anything other than something bad. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Now, if it was a platonic friend, or if it was his mom, if he had called his mom, or like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Maybe I'd feel differently. But that's kind of like the lens I'm looking through.
Yeah.
It's like you're calling the person you're having an affair with.
Yeah.
About the fact that your fiance and child are dead in your arms.
Mm-hmm.
Versus trying to call 911 to try to like salvage this situation as much as you can, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very bizarre behavior. He was then asked about his relationship with Carla, and he said that it was purely sexual. He got caught up in the moment.
Oh, my God.
It was such a men answer, like, just like a dog answer, okay?
Like, where's Momo when you need him?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not even barking tonight, y'all.
But basically, he never saw a future with Carla. It was not a long-term thing. He was really just shitting on her, okay? In every way. And that kind of made me feel a type of way, too. I'm just like, really?
Dudes love to do that.
It's like, where's the accountability?
Right.
But then he finishes off by saying, like, he feels that Avis and his unborn child are dead because of his actions.
Okay.
Great. I'm glad that you take a little bit of accountability for their deaths. He basically said if he had stayed faithful, if he was not flirtatious and out in these streets, that he feels that he would be married by now, his child will now be, like, at this point, probably, like, 2 or 3. He does feel guilty about that.
Or so he says.
So he says. He also runs through, like, his alibi, because on cross they're asking him, like, okay, well, you know, you were at basketball practice at 5:30 to 7:30. What happened during that time? Again, like, there was such a huge gap of him going to Carla's house before getting home. So they questioned him about that. And he was saying, you know, like, Carla just seemed really upset. And so he stayed to basically console her, whatever that means, because she was not in a good mood. And apparently he had also been flirting with the junior basketball coach. He had, like, a thing going on with her, too. And she was able to verify the fact that he was at basketball practice the entire time.
But if it's somebody he's having an affair with, I feel like that's not really a clean alibi. Meaning there's, like, a conflict of interest in me telling the cops you were here because I like you.
Yeah.
You know? Versus it just being coworkers, generally. Did they say the time of death of Avis and their unborn child?
I believe it was around 6 p.m., like 5:50 or so. By the time he got to her, it had been 3 hours.
Oh, my gosh.
Like, she had, yeah.
So there was really likely nothing that could be done. Mm-hmm. But that also says that he really wasn't there. Mm-hmm. But just because he's not there, we already know this, just because you didn't pull the trigger or you weren't holding the knife doesn't mean you didn't have any involvement.
Right, and that's what the defense was basically trying to do and say that, you know, he was involved behind the scenes some way, somehow. They also try to say that they, as in the defense, said that because he was at Carla's house a lot, he had access to the guns and the shoes, and they basically said that he put on Carla's shoes and he was the one that kicked the door in, and it's, you know, he had opportunity to take things out of her house, specifically that day when he was dropping off groceries and picking things up, that he had opportunity to go into her house, take shoes when she wasn't looking, and take the gun and so forth.
Huh.
Like, in between. So this would have been early before basketball practice started to have picked up these things, got the gun, got the shoe. But they said there's no way that he could have driven home in between basketball practice to get back to basketball practice. It didn't make sense time-wise. Right. It was impossible. Even though the opportunity could have been there, that he could have done those things, he couldn't have carried it out.
Yeah.
So.
Just because he didn't do it doesn't mean he didn't tell her to do it.
Right.
Or, you know what I mean? That is also a possibility. Him putting on the shoes, I mean, if there was a time gap where it could have been possible, I think that would have created some reasonable doubt.
Mm-hmm.
Right? If it happened that, you know, basketball practice was canceled that day.
Right.
You know? So it's not so far-fetched, but in this sense, it feels far-fetched because, you know, basketball practice was happening.
Mm-hmm.
Were they able to, like, ping tower, like, check where the cell phone towers
pinged? That's what I was getting into next.
Look at that. So, psychic.
Let's talk a little bit more about other evidence that they have. And one of those is the cell phone pinging. And actually, Keon's cell phone pinged at basketball practice.
Okay.
Around the time of Avis's death. It didn't ping till around 8:40 when he arrived home. It didn't ping in that area.
Okay.
So it didn't ping in Ridgeland at all until 8:40 p.m.
Okay.
However, Carla's phone did ping around 5:35 p.m., just about a quarter of a mile from their house, from Avis's and Keon's home.
Mm.
So that's a little strange. Mm-hmm. There's also cell phone records of her making phone calls around like 5:37. That was within range of the cell tower. I don't know who she was calling, but it said that she had placed a call at 5:37, then around 6:04, 6:07. So it basically placed her near the crime scene around the time that the crime occurred.
Well, smell like a duck. Look like a duck. Is that how you say smell like a duck? Or is it quack like a duck, walk like a duck? Whatever. It's a damn duck. And Carla is the duck in this situation.
Yeah.
But who was she calling during that time?
I'm not sure. So on Snapped, it made it seem like she had... So I had this part and I took it out because I was like, I don't know where this fits in. But she had called her mom, apparently, and was out for a jog around this time, like around 5:30, she called her mom. And then she got a call from, she said, Mom, I'll call you back. And then she got a call from Keon around that time.
At 5:30?
Yeah, around like 5:30.
But wasn't he going into practice at that time? Remember earlier, he had to get off the phone with Avis because he was going to go to practice?
Yeah.
So then he hung up on Avis just to call.
I mean, it's possible. I think he was also on the phone. I don't know if Avis called him again, but it said that they were on the phone around 5:36.
Him and Avis?
Yes. He was the last person she spoke to at 5:36. So they had spoken around 5:15.
Yeah.
And I don't know, like, who called who.
Yeah.
But they spoke again around 5:36. So I don't know how he was able to coach and make phone calls, but like maybe they were just like, you know, like his fiance is pregnant, so it's okay.
I mean, okay.
If he takes this call.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, it was unclear who Carla was talking to. It seemed like it was her mom, and her mom described her being out of breath because she was out for a jog, which I thought was interesting. Around, again, it's around the same time, like around 5:35.
Out of breath because she's running from the crime scene? I'm just curious.
It's possible. It is possible.
I mean,
so, as
does
far...
Does she normally jog? Is she a jogger? You know what I'm saying?
I'm not sure. I mean, she was a cheerleader in high school.
I would just put her mom on the stand or her friends and say, you know, do you know her, like,
right,
as a person who does exercise? Yeah. How many times a week does she jog? Like, is this normal routine? You know what I'm saying? Because I feel like... Mm-hmm. You probably talk to friends about it.
Yeah.
It comes up in conversation or, like, to your parents.
The way that her mom made it sound was as if it was a routine thing. Like, she called me during a jog.
Hmm.
It was, like, she was very nonchalant about it. She didn't seem concerned, like, oh, my gosh, why are you out of breath? She was just saying, like, an observation, like, yeah, she was jogging. She was a little out of breath.
Now, if I called you and I said I was jogging, what would you say?
What did you do? Because there's
I'm
no
not a jogger. If I called you and said I'm at pole dancing class, what would you say?
I'd just be like, okay,
exactly.
Have fun.
You see, it's like, you know your family.
Mm-hmm.
So I would just be curious to know from her mom if this was like a routine thing.
Her mom, you know, like I said, it was an off-putting to the mom.
Okay.
At least not to me.
Okay,
didn't seem that way.
Dearest. Okay.
So yeah, that was a cell phone pinging. The gun, as far as the gun, I don't know that they definitively said this is a murder weapon, but technically what killed Avis was bullets from a .38 caliber.
So circumstantial enough.
Yeah, circumstantial enough. As far as the shoe print that they found, remember how I said that when they got the warrant for Carla's house, they found shoes that were around size 10.
Right.
So when they tested the shoe, they found what looked like blood in like the crevice of the sole of the shoe. But the interesting thing is that there were differences in reports.
Okay.
So one report from the state lab said that there was no blood. And then a private lab said that there was blood. So the prosecution was basically trying to explain that by saying, oh, well, the reason why the state didn't find blood on it is because the state was told to not touch the sole at all.
Okay.
Okay. Because they wanted that to be tested separately. And so that was made known in a report for the state to, you know, don't touch the sole of the shoe.
Don't test it.
Don't test it. Don't swab it.
Okay.
So they never did. So that's why there was no report of the blood being on the shoe from the state of Mississippi. As far as gunpowder residue, they tested on Keon, remember, like initial interrogation. And they found that there was gunpowder residue on his right hand.
What?
So the way that the prosecution tried to flip it, though, was that he was touching Avis's body.
Okay.
And so it rubbed off on him.
It's interesting to me that the prosecution is making, like, a case for him. Meaning, like, they're protecting him.
Mm-hmm.
They're rationalizing it, right? And that tells me one thing. He probably cut a deal with them, did he?
I was wondering that, too. I never saw anything on it.
I feel like because they couldn't get him, it's like, or maybe they thought they could get him on a little bit of stuff, maybe accessory, and they said to him, like, if you testify...
That's what I'm thinking, yeah.
Like, then we won't charge you as mm-hmm. an accessory to this.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, the fact that he had gunpowder residue on his hand, I would call, did they call an expert witness to the stand on gunpowder residue? I would call an expert witness if it were me, and I would just say, is it easy to transmit gunpowder residue?
So there was a forensic pathologist that testified.
Yeah.
And he was testifying to, like, what killed Avis.
Right.
The bullet to her head is what really killed her.
Right.
But as far as talking about the gunpowder residue, I'm not sure if the pathologist went into those details.
I mean, if you just Google this question, it says that it is actually possible to transfer gunpowder residue or whatever to your hand if something like clothing is contaminated with it. So, okay, that makes sense. If I'm really thinking about it, Keon, there's really nothing placing him at the scene. You know what I'm saying? It's mm-hmm. like, yeah, he was on the phone with Carla, but there's nothing actually putting him there.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't know the kind of psychological stuff that was happening between him and Carla, whether right. he told her or not, whether he said something else and she interpreted it as like, oh, he wants me to do this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. But it does feel to me like there is some sort of responsibility on his end.
Yeah.
And, you know, and to what extent that could be charged by the state is different.
Mm-hmm. So on October 12th, 2009, the defense rests its case. Carla never takes a stand because they didn't want her to be cross-examined. And the prosecutor was saying that he was very surprised by that because they were prepared to cross-examine her. Mm. But they were still confident that there was enough evidence in the case that she would be convicted. The defense felt like they raised enough reasonable doubt that she wouldn't be convicted.
You know, it's interesting to me because it is a constitutional right that you can, you know, choose not to testify, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And I just, sometimes I feel like it's not fair that you don't have to testify if you're the person that's on trial. I feel like you should have to. But again, then you get on the stand and then what do? You plead the fifth every mm-hmm. question. And then yeah. that can make it look even worse. You know what mm-hmm. I'm saying? They keep you off the stand because they don't want you to basically put your foot in your mouth.
Yeah.
You know, and for the prosecution to hone in on one detail, that could basically ruin the entire case.
Yeah.
Or you get emotional, like on these shows where it's like they put people on the stand and then they start going in on them and then they're like, I hate this. And then they're like, see, that's how they angry they got. And that's how angry they were when they killed this person.
Yeah.
You know, so it's, I get why, but it's like at the same time, I used to feel, remember, like when I was reading cases in law school, like, I feel like people should have to. But I guess you have the right to not self-incriminate yourself.
Yeah, I mean, I just never know, like, in a case like this, where Carla has, in the past, we saw her dig a hole for herself. I think the defense was just concerned that she would dig an even bigger hole.
Yeah.
So I think that that's a lot of the times what it comes down to. To play it safe, they just said, like, we're not going to have her take the stand. So October 14th, 2009 comes around and the jury deliberated for an hour and they came.
That's a bad sign.
Yep, it is. And they came back and with a verdict, they found her guilty on 2 counts of capital murder.
Mm.
And so she is sentenced to life imprisonment without the possibility of parole.
Hmm.
So her reaction.
Wait a minute. Why didn't she get the death penalty?
I wasn't really sure about that. So on Snapped, the way that they made it seem is that because she's a mother herself, it just would have looked bad for her to receive the death penalty. And
people don't care about that.
I know people don't really care about that, but it just seemed like that was an underlying factor.
I mean, when the death penalty is up for whatever assignment to the individual,
mm-hmm.
usually it's basically another mini trial that happens.
Oh yeah, you're right.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And certain states have different rules on like how many of the jurors have to like say that, you know, they want the death penalty. I feel like some states it might be unanimous, some others might be something different, but basically there's like a it's almost like a mini trial anytime death penalty is up
mm-hmm.
for consideration
mm-hmm.
after the actual trial. So they must have gone through that. They probably put some witnesses on the stand to testify to her character and to the fact that she's a mother and stuff like that. Really pull on your heartstrings, basically.
Yeah.
because for them to end up just giving her life in prison without the possibility of parole, I mean, I guess that's bad enough. I personally, I don't know if I believe in the death penalty. I think an eye for an eye will make the whole world blind, right? That's a very common saying, but I do agree with that. And I think that the real punishment is having to live with what you did and basically be caged, like, you know, with your thoughts, not even physically, right? Like, your mind is in a cage. So I feel like that is a bigger punishment than just death penalty. However, when you get the death penalty, they put people on death row for years. Sometimes you sit on death row for 20, 25 years before
there are some people who have been on death row for like 40 years.
Exactly. So I'm like, why are they on death row? Like, just chilling. Instead of, you might as well convert their sentence to life in prison without the possibility of parole. I don't know. That's for another episode, though. The death penalty. Interesting. So, does Carla maintain her innocence?
She does. As far as, like, Avis's family and their reaction,
right?
They feel that justice has been served, but obviously they're still very sad because of the murder itself. You know, it was so gruesome. It's not only the death of your sister, your child, also her baby, her unborn child. So it was just, it was very traumatic for the family.
What
very,
about
very
Keon? Traumatic. How are they with Keon? What's he up to?
So Keon, I couldn't find much on him, but apparently he's married based on like Mississippi marital records.
Interesting.
At this point during the trial in 2009, he was already remarried.
Excuse me?
Yes. And Carla said something along the lines of, she's not even surprised. Sounds about right.
Whoa. That was fast.
Yeah.
That was really fast.
So as far as I know, he's still married. So
he probably lays low because he doesn't want people to. How could that girl, like, I don't know. The person who married him, I'm like, she didn't have no damn questions. I would be sitting up there asking some questions. You feel me?
Exactly.
You know, it's just like, I don't know. Did Carla ever say that he told her to do it?
No.
She never said that?
No. She, like, never
implicated him?
No.
What?
No.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Whoa. Even when he was trashing her on the stand?
Yeah, no. She didn't. Which was so, I think, shocking even to the prosecution, because they thought, like, okay, if anything, she's going to say something.
Well, I mean, her lawyers kind of try to make it seem like that when they said that maybe he, when he came to the house for the groceries, like, maybe he did this, you know,
The
old switcheroo. But yeah. I don't know. I thought she would be more vocal, or her lawyers would be more vocal than that.
Yeah.
But maybe they were, you know, that court transcript is long as hell, just saying. But it just seems like, I'm pretty sure I might have seen the snapped episode, and I don't remember, like, her saying to the cops when she was being interviewed, or when they like had arrested her and stuff like that.
He
told me to do it.
No.
And her lawyers didn't really say that he told her.
Right.
They were just like, well, maybe he did a old little switcheroo.
Yeah.
So,
I wonder why they didn't lead with that defense. I don't know.
Probably because it was going to be hard for them to place him. Well, I mean, if it's something that he told her, I think it's hard because it's like a he said, she said situation.
Yeah.
And it just lined up so well for the prosecution in terms of motive when it comes to Carla and stuff.
Yeah.
So, and less likely with him, mostly because of his alibi.
Yeah.
Because if he, again, I think if he was not at practice that day and he had nothing planned.
He'd be in prison too.
He would be in prison. That's what I think.
Yeah.
He would be in prison.
Mm-hmm.
They would have found a way to tie it together. But here it's like, I thought during this whole thing, this whole episode, as you were telling us, I thought you were going to say that they were co-defendants.
Yeah. I was thinking that too as I was watching Snap.
So the fact that they weren't co-defendants is like, okay, so that tells me maybe Carla did lose it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, maybe she lost it and she just thought, if I kill her, like, I'll have Keon.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. But a part of me does feel like, could he have known? Like, a part of me has that question still. Could he have known that, like, she was planning to do this? Did he call Avis to make sure she was home so that he could call, you know, Carla and say, hey, she's in the house right now.
Right.
You could go.
Right.
Like, you know, it's just some questions I got. Mm-hmm. And if I got questions, I mean, wouldn't his wife have questions, you know?
Yeah.
But if he married a Carla, let's say that, okay, then they wouldn't have questions. And that's the end of this week's episode. No, because really, like, Carla, I mean, if she really did, you know what I'm saying? It looked like she did it, you feel me?
Mm-hmm.
They saying she did it. We gonna roll with that. And listen, I think it takes a special type of person to kind of go to that length for somebody. And you would think that not too many of those people exist. But then we get to an episode like this with Carla. Remember the other girl? Was her name Francesca? In that episode where the boyfriend was, like, dating the girl. I know her name. It's coming to me. It starts with an S. She was in school. She was in a domestic violence relationship with her ex-boyfriend. She had a new boyfriend. His girlfriend helped to, like, burn her body. You don't remember that?
Yes, I remember.
Cassandra. That was her. The girlfriend's name was Cassandra.
And we were that, like, was crazy. Cassandra.
So we have seen already, and we've only covered 50 cases, right?
Yeah.
We've already seen two. And that's just cases we cover. Imagine things you don't see in the world. You know what I'm saying? The stories don't reach, like, even the internet. Mm-hmm. You feel me? There are people out there who are impressionable. And, you know, the heart and the mind can be very dangerous when you're in love or obsessed. I mean, in this case, it seems like obsession.
I was also thinking about, you know, the fact that they only knew each other for a few months. Like, Carla and Keon only knew each other between August and now November.
Well, I mean, have you seen Love is Blind and how crazy these people get? Have y'all seen Love is Blind? Because Nancy, you should have left Bartiste alone.
But to commit murder is what I mean. Like,
I know. You know. Okay, murder is a different... Okay, I guess murder is a step higher. But watching Love is Blind is really trippy for me because... Mm-hmm. This person could be disrespecting you in your face. You're only with them a week and you are crying. So, shit, give them a month. Maybe it is murder. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, you get, like, they displayed it on TV in front of our faces, like, showing us how things like this could happen.
Mm-hmm.
How that kind of, like, emotion could just take you to a different level. And you're thinking, you know, it was clear that it doesn't take years.
Yeah.
For Love is Blind, it took them a week. The only Love is Blind couple we acknowledge is Lauren and Cameron, by the way. We stand Lauren
true.
And Cameron. Everybody else, I don't know them.
But a lot of those couples, what we were witnessing is anxious attachment.
Yes.
And with anxious attachment, it doesn't matter if the person is treating you shitty. It's just like...
It's true.
You're like, no, I want this to work. And you're afraid of rejection. And you and your mind think, like, you can make this work. You just need time.
You just need time.
You're going to show them... you know, all the wonderful things that you have to offer them, and you can change their mind.
Right.
So that's likely what was happening with Carla, you know?
Right. So. Except she just took it too far and took a life and took a baby's life and,
yeah,
like, destroyed her own life. She destroyed her son's life.
Yeah.
Right? So it's like, there are so many lives that you destroyed from one action.
Mm-hmm.
That is horrific. And, like, I can only imagine... how Avis's parents are feeling, how they're dealing with it. Especially, again, this is right around the holiday time. You just had Thanksgiving together. You know what I was thinking? That maybe her cousin gave her the gun on Thanksgiving. Because he gave it to her a few days before, right?
You know what?
Maybe he did.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's
what
very,
a Thanksgiving.
That is
normally
possible.
You just chop it up with your cousins and about, you know, what has gone on during the year. This chop up was like, yeah, can I get a gun? Like, damn, what kind of conversations we having on Thanksgiving, you know?
No, that's an interesting point.
We live in a crazy world.
Wow. So I guess I should also mention, like, what else is happening with Carla's case. Okay. So in 2010, she filed a motion for a new trial. Some of the grounds that she had were misconduct by the jury during deliberations. Another reason was that she had filed a motion to suppress evidence that was taken from her home during the search warrant, and that was denied, and she felt like it was prejudicial to her case and so forth. There were, like, certain grounds. Like, there were multiple reasons why she wanted a new trial, and it was denied. Now, in 2012, she had appealed her case in general, and that was also denied. And basically, the Court of Appeals, they affirmed her conviction.
In my head.
So,
I wonder what Avis's parents think about Carla. You know, sometimes you reach a point of forgiveness and you kind of see, like, she was young, trying to, this or that. Or maybe they're like, no, you know?
I was trying so hard to, like, find, like, articles on it. Like, I'm sure that there are, like, if you were to watch the various shows, I'm sure that her parents show up. I did see her sister talking, one of her sisters, and they're still very distraught. Again, the way that Avis and her baby died is just horrific and something that is always going to be a stain on their family.
Yeah.
It's not something that they could just get over over time. True. Even with all these years that have passed, it's still very hard on the family.
It's tough.
Very, very hard. I mean, it's been now 16 years.
My goodness.
Yeah.
Which means that Carla's son is like probably 19
in college. Oh my gosh,
or something,
yeah.
Right? Like 18 or 19.
Yeah. At the time that Carla was, you know, convicted, she was 28 at the time.
Wow.
And that was in 2009.
Just many lives destroyed. Let's not let love or, you know, Negroes drive us to this point, ladies. Like, let's not let these fools drive us to this point, mm-hmm. to a point of no return. You know what I'm saying? Like, it might hurt and all that stuff, but
it's not worth it.
It's not worth it. You do not win in any of this. The other person wins. The best revenge is your success.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Literally. You can kick, scream, cry about it, yell at them on the phone. You feel me? But, you know, once you take that kind of action, look at the stain it left on her character.
There's no coming back from it.
Her character was destroyed. Yeah. Done. All this hard work you did all these years, gone.
Mm-hmm.
Now all people see you as is a murderer.
Yeah.
Not someone who was bright and did this and that and sociable and a great mom. No. People see you for that one action you took.
Except for her mom. Her mom is typical
moms. What can you say?
Definitely backs her up 110%.
So her mom thinks she's innocent.
Yeah. She was on the show speaking. And
she thinks Keon did it?
She says Keon is a wolf in sheep's clothing.
I mean.
Okay. She believes that he's in on it. During this time, she has actually started like a website for Carla to basically collect funds for legal assistance for her appeal. There's also like a blog that she has started to basically say that Carla has been framed. She's innocent. She didn't do this. So
listen,
she has a whole support.
If she's innocent, she's innocent. Right now, it's like the chips are stacked against her.
Yeah.
And things are just pointing at her. If you can find something to not point at her, more power to you. You know what I'm saying? Innocent people should definitely not be in prison. But I just don't know if that is Carla. You know what I'm saying? That's all.
Another interesting thing is that, remember I said there was a forensic pathologist who testified as an expert witness on this case?
Right.
His name is Stephen Hain. He actually has been discredited as a medical examiner, and he has conducted 80% of autopsies in Mississippi.
Didn't he come up in another case of us?
I think he did. Yes. I'm pretty sure he did.
He did.
Yeah.
Unless there's multiple people being like discredited, but
I'm pretty sure it's him. Because as I was reading this, I was like, what? And the Innocence Project had released a statement on him saying that he's discredited. And
yes,
they're looking into cases that he has conducted.
Yes.
And there are a few cases that have been like reopened, convictions that have been overturned. Now, in terms of Carla's case, I'm not sure because...
I mean, you never know because I think he's really, like, you know, he could have really...
I mean, okay, so here's specifically...
Yeah.
This is specifically what he said. Banks, as in Avis Banks, that's her full name, would have been conscious during at least 2 gunshot wounds for 15 to 20 minutes, except for the last one when she was shot in the back of the head. So that was the one shot that killed her.
Okay.
And then he testified that she probably was shot in the thigh first, then the chest, and then the head.
Right.
But yeah, I don't know to what extent that would help Carla's case.
I mean, listen, they can always find something.
There could be something there, yeah.
Yes.
Like, you can go down because of an expert witness's testimony.
Exactly. So it's nothing to be played about.
Yeah.
It's not to be played with, I mean. So.
Yeah, but that's the case of Avis Banks.
Avis Banks and her unborn child, may they rest in peace. Oh my gosh, just send well wishes to her family, everybody involved, and mm-hmm. also peace for Carla's mom and stuff. Because yeah. I can only imagine, I don't have a child, right? But my mom always tells me, when you have a kid, you'll understand. Meaning, like, you know, your kid is still your kid.
Yeah.
And I hope she finds peace in the fact that, like, you know, if Carla's guilty, that she's guilty. You know what I'm saying? Like, kids do things sometimes. Like, they disappoint you. They do things that you didn't, you know, you taught them not to do. But, you know, just hoping that she feels some sort of peace. And Carla's son, too.
Yeah. Carla's son still lives with her parents, by the way.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, now he's like 19, right? Didn't we say that? So, like, yeah. I don't know.
Maybe he's in college. Yeah. Hopefully. Okay. Well, we'll be back with another episode of It's the Mystery for Me next Tuesday. Until then, stay safe out here, per usual. And, you know, don't let these fools, like, get y'all in this state of mind.
Yeah. It's not worth it.
I rebuke this thinking, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I rebuke these fools.
Say no to anxious attachments.
Yeah.
Work on yourself. It's not worth it.
It's not.
The man will come to you. You don't got to chase no man.
Let me tell you, and they always spin the block. You heard it here always. First. You heard it here first.
Mm-hmm.
I've done been blocked on block.
It's crazy out here.
Now. And that's how I sleep at night. Because I'm like, you going to spin the block for me.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what? Maybe I'll open the door. I don't know. JK. All right, y'all. See you guys next Tuesday.
Bye.
Bye.